fight to survive in these heights. These nights it seems like to recite what we write to seek strike to be like.
All right. Welcome here back to the Raymetown Riot Podcast. I'm here with Bobby Lloyd. This is Matt Raymer, and we're going to give you a little sports knowledge. Thomas Mayfield is actually out today, and we're going to start here with the very, very disappointing UFC fight with Holly Holm. And, she was coming off a loss to Miesha Tate, defending her belt, and she was the heavy favorite going into this fight, and I'll let Bobby say a little bit more.
Well, it's just a really interesting fight considering everything that's been going on in the women's 135 division. Holly Holm came in and kind of wrecked the division last November when she surprise knocked out Ronda Rousey, because Ronda Rousey is just kind of at the top of the game, kind of seemed unbeatable by anyone in that class. And then since then, Holly Holm has failed to win a fight. She lost to Miesha Tate, who was at the time like one of the very top contenders, and now she just lost to a young and up and coming Shevchenko, Valentina Shevchenko. So, with that being the case, it kind of eliminates Holm from contender status and more of like a gate holder for up and coming fighters to kind of validate their legitimacy.
One big thing with this is, if she would have won this fight, it would have put her right back in the contention to battling the best. It should have been right about in a co-main event or so, battling for the best. Now with this loss, she's officially going to go down to the bottom, where she's going to have to work her way up hard to get back up to that top main event, win two or three fights in a row to get to that main event category, in my opinion. And her next fight is kind of a win or break all.
Well, yeah, I mean, you never want to be on a losing streak in the UFC. Another tough thing for Holly is that she's already in her mid-30s. So watching her fight Valentina Shevchenko, who is 10 years younger than her, it was pretty evident that she's lost some explosiveness in the last couple years. She wasn't near as active as she was in previous fights that I've seen her, she might have been dealing with an injury, or maybe she's just getting older the way athletes do. But she was standing more flat-footed. She was completely out, just didn't have the stamina or the speed that Shevchenko had, and that was kind of what determined in the fight. And she was standing flat-footed in a lot of instances and just kind of catching stuff. Shevchenko throwing more punches, throwing more kicks, and landing more stuff on her.
Well, I heard it. So Shevchenko, I tell you, Shevchenko was the counterpuncher. Shevchenko was the ultimate counterpuncher to what Holly Holm did. Like, Shevchenko just sat back and countered everything and took advantage of her that way.
Yeah, well, she was winning the exchanges. That's exactly what it was. So it was.
But Shevchenko wasn't the aggressor.
Keeping her distance, I would say for the majority of the fight, Shevchenko was not the aggressor. Like, Holly had ring control for the majority of the fight, but almost all of the exchanges, Shevchenko won. And then also, I mean, coming from Albuquerque, New Mexico, we're proud as all hell of Holly Holm and her achievements. And I think as a role model for a lot of young people and just an athlete that we can really look up to and admire, I think that there's nothing you can say bad against her. But from a fighting standpoint, in this particular instance, there's some things that you can critique about Holly's game. It does look like she's slowing down to me. Second, her ground game is pretty bad in comparison to most of what these young ladies are coming with. Like, her being vulnerable against Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey on the ground is one thing, because they are world-class wrestlers and jiu-jitsu fighters. But she also got beat on the ground by Shevchenko, and I'm starting to wonder if there's anyone that's not going to be a problem with for her in the UFC. So she's always got to look out for the takedown. She's always got to fight against that.
Well, Holly's got to utilize her strengths. She's a world-class boxer. She was the best boxer in the world for many, many years, and she really didn't have much competition in boxing. So now, and kickboxing, not just boxing, kickboxing too. And when she goes to UFC, it's hard to do, but she has to utilize her strengths. I feel like that's why she was able to defeat Ronda Rousey, because it was a hard, it was one matchup Rousey was hard to defend by. I mean, she was so used to winning these dominant fights and overpowering someone, but Holly Holm has a great takedown defense, and she's a great stand-up fighter.
So, a couple interesting things about what you're talking about. First thing, with Holly Holm being an elite boxer, the fact of the matter is, I think for people that watched that fight, is she got outboxed and out-kickboxed in that particular instance.
I agree, which that was my point I was saying to you earlier, is it was shocking. Holly Holm is known to be the best stand-up, arguably, in UFC for the women. And this fight wasn't that way. Shevchenko, the counters were so on point and like so predictive of what Holly Holm was going to throw that it looked dominating in a lot of facets.
Yeah, Shevchenko definitely dominated the fight. I mean, won in unanimous matter. There wasn't much argument from anyone that watched the fight that Shevchenko won. Holly did take a round or two, but not definitively. She lost in the punch count. She didn't finish the fight as strong, which is surprising, but it'll be interesting to see for her. So she's on a two-fight loss streak. Now she's going to have to go fight another probably much younger fighter who's trying to rise up the ranks.
Yeah, that was my question I was going to send to you. So we've talked about what's in the current position, but what's Holly Holm's future now? And I feel like her next fight is such a big fight in her career just to sustain it in a lot of ways.
Oh, I think if she loses her next fight, retirement is probably the smart option at that point from fighting. Not that she shouldn't continue to compete as an athlete or to train as an athlete or anything like that, but if she loses her next fight, I for a while the build up, if she would have won this fight, it was a high likelihood of a rematch with Rousey or another shot or and a rematch Nunes. With Tate or Nunes. A shot at the title.
Yeah.
And now that she's lost this fight, I don't see the appeal for a Rousey rematch unless...
No, she has to win at least one or two more matches to get that.
And then so she's probably going to go fight against somebody who's not as big of a name and somebody who's on their way up. It's a situation for fighters when they're kind of old and they're not really competing for the title anymore. She's going to be a gatekeeper for a while. Unless she wins two or three fights in a row, then she might work her way back up into contender status. But this was the type of fight that she had to win. And it's unfortunate. And it's also unfortunate for the Rousey rematch. I think that was a fight that a lot of us were excited to see. I mean, Ronda Rousey hasn't returned to the ring since November. And we're getting up there, and it seemed like that was kind of the fight that would have been big time for her career if she... To maybe avenge herself against Holly Holm, or big for Holly Holm's career also as a chance to fight one of the biggest stars in the game.
It would have been huge for Holly Holm because it would have guaranteed two fights. Whether if she would have lost to Rousey the second time, a third rematch would have happened. So it would have been two more guaranteed big time fights, in my opinion.
Possibly. At least one humongous purse of a fight. Like they sort of made millions of dollars on that fight. It would have been a UFC main event.
But I mean, Holly Holm has come out many times stating that she doesn't regret fighting immediately after that because she was a competitor. She wanted to get back to the ring. And if you look at Rousey's still not medically cleared. So Holly Holm would still be waiting.
Correction there. Rousey is medically cleared.
Are you sure?
Fight. Yeah, she's emotionally unable to fight right now, which it's kind of, I mean, she's got to work her deal. The UFC and Ronda Rousey do not have a deal right now.
Is that the difference in like women and men or something? Like, that's weird to me.
I'm not sure if it's, her contract has been dropped with the UFC. So Rousey was dropped for, not necessarily a women and men thing. It's more similar to like, say, a player that is unable health issues.
Like Nick Young for the Lakers at the end of the year.
Nick Young or Larry Sanders ended his contract with the Milwaukee Bucks a few years ago because of mental health reasons.
I don't think
because
of a loss, though.
Something more similar to this.
I feel like it's just soft, in my opinion. You look at like the toughest. You look at Rousey was before the Holly Holm fight, was the toughest woman on this planet. She was the most dominant, toughest woman on this planet that people looked upon. and now she's not mentally
she
tough to get back in the freaking ring,
didn't she?
Holy crap!
But Matt, to give these fighters respect that they deserve, I've never had all my teeth knocked out. So, yeah,
I don't know. I've been knocked out on the field, and I got back on the field.
I've taken some hits and gotten back up also, but I've never been beaten in the way that she was beaten, and I definitely haven't had to deal with it.
Well, the popularity, going from top of the world to the bottom of the world.
Under the national media, yeah.
But anyway, all right, let's... Either way, Hall of Home, we're rooting for you. Freaking A, hope you win your next fight, and get back in there.
All love to Holly. I hope you can recover, bounce back, win your next fight, and continue to have a great career. We love you here, Holly.
So let's transition now to...
UFC 201.
Yeah, Bobby's super stoked about this. I'll let Bobby go into this
fight. The main event on UFC 201 is Robbie Lawler, who's just been having these super exciting...
He's a brawler.
He absolutely, man. The dude fights to the death every single fight, and he's tough as nails. No one's able to take him out. He swings hard, as hard in the fifth round as he does in the first round. And now he's fighting against a guy that is an absolute monster in Tyrone Woodley. Tyrone Woodley's coming off knocking out Josh Koscheck recently. Carlos Condit beat him with a brutal leg kick. So this guy, seriously, if you look at him, if you don't know who Tyrone Woodley is, you can look at him on the internet, like Google. He is an absolute beast, just 100. It's incredible that he's even able to get down to 170 pounds, but he is so full of explosive power and athleticism.
His highlight tape, you watch him, he is just pure explosion.
I would be shocked if this fight doesn't end in a knockout.
So this is my initial take on this fight. My initial take is that you always have these UFC fights. You pay this money for it, and you get so damn disappointed because people just stand there. It's a boring fight. I feel like this main event will not be boring because these two fighters are just so ruthless. They're brawlers. They go out there, and they swing for the fences.
So the 170 division is chock full of competition. Great fighters. It's probably the deepest division in the entire UFC. And these guys have both worked their way through it, like knocking out elite fighters, beating, and just kind of like having these dominant fights where yeah, they're putting everything out on the line and not disappointing at all. So a lot of people don't know them because they're not the biggest name fighters. But then when you watch this fight, I guarantee it's not going to be a boring dance for 25 minutes. These guys are going to go at each other and... they can both take some punches, so I don't expect it to necessarily be like a one-punch knockout or anything like that. But at the same time,
you don't want
these guys
a
both have knockout power.
Yeah, you don't want a one-punch knockout, in my opinion. You want a good brawl that goes out and you goes five rounds, maybe someone wins in the fifth round.
Yeah, I mean...
You want to get your money's worth. That's my point of this, is that you get your money's worth in this fight. And if you don't know these fighters, look them up. It will get you excited for this night. And my big thing that I was thinking of is... Wow, what the hell of a job UFC is doing right now. Because we went from UFC 200, right? That was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And now to Holly Holm. And then now to UFC 201 right away again. It's like nonstop UFC action. Where I feel like UFC in the past, you had a break for a month or two, right? Of no big main events, no big fights that you really paid a lot of money to go see. And now we're having consistency. Boom, 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 boom. It just shows the growth in this industry through the years.
What they've really done is they've done a good job of building up stars and building up narrative and stories to get you interested in these athletes and their career paths. So what's going on now is it's like, boom, 1 week we're tuning in to see Holly Holm fight. Boom, next week we're tuning in to see Robbie Lawler, Tyrone Woodley, because this is like a couple total monsters. And then within like a month, we're going to have Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz too. And these are fights that you want to see. This is like, if you're an MMA fan, they're doing a great job promoting these fights and keeping it on schedule where you're not getting bored week after week.
You don't forget things, is my point. Like, you've seen the past, you'd forget about it, right? You'd have other sporting events that come in and talk about it. I mean, other than that would come in and really just overshadow the UFC for months, but then UFC would have one big event, then fall back into the back. I feel like now UFC is at the point where it's not falling back to the back. It's never going to beat football, NFL, or something like that, but it's consistently being talked about to the point where it's exciting. I mean, we've talked about the UFC now on this podcast like six straight weeks.
That well, just yeah, shows. Dude, I mean, that's what I'm saying about these superstars, because a few years ago, it was people just really weren't that interested in the athletes. So it's like, okay, George St. Pierre is only going to be able to fight two or three times a year, so you're only going to hear about those. And then Brock Lesnar is only going to be able to fight two or three times a year, so maybe you hear about four fights that year is making big news or something. But now with all the narrative surrounding McGregor Diaz and Jose Aldo and
all these athletes. Right,
yeah, all these guys.
I completely agree with you, Bob, and I think that's a great point. The star power in the UFC has completely grown. And salute to UFC. I think they're doing a great job of their overall scheme, and they just sold the company for $4 billion, so they're doing great. And not to mention UFC 202 is going to be here soon, and that has McGregor in it, so you know that's going to be one hell of an event. But yeah, we're going to transition here next to a little NFL talk and some MLB talk, a gigantic trade that went down. We'll see you guys in a second.
Matt, you're never going to guess where I ate for lunch the other day.
Where'd you go?
So I've been listening to your advice for all these words, and I finally tried out cheese and coffee.
Woo!
On Manal, Louisiana.
There you go. Man. Best sandwich place in Albuquerque.
I agree. Yeah, I couldn't ask for a better lunch setting. I had the Big Apple sandwich, which was a roast beef pastrami sandwich with a delicious bowl of green chili stew. The whole thing came together at a really reasonable price, and probably the most delicious sandwich I've ever had in this town. I'm not surprised they're doing great business.
Literally, you can get whatever you want. The Rio Grande's my favorite. You can go with the Chelsea, the classic turkey, green chili, avocado. Sandwiches galore there. It's a weird name, cheese and coffee, but it's a little local joint. It's actually Holly Holm's favorite place to eat, and it's on Louisiana and Manal. And it is fantastic. Completely recommend it. Best sandwiches in town. Check them out online at cheeseandcoffee.com.
All right, thanks for listening to that quick commercial break. Here we are back with some NFL talk. We got the season coming up in a matter of how much time, Matt?
We're looking at, you got the Hall of Fame game next month in August, so it's coming upon us.
Yeah.
Let's go. Damn it, yes. The NFL season is back. Training camp is officially starting right now throughout the NFL.
Really? Woo, baby!
And you know what's exciting? You know the NFL runs this country in a lot of ways. And it's so exciting, but I have to bring up some negative news that is coming in the NFL now. And it just sucks. Like, you're just getting all these substance abuse, misdemeanors, whatever charges are happening to all these players throughout the NFL. And I'm just going to throw out some names for you, Bob. And well, the one that came out today was Randy Gregory, the second-round pick for the Dallas Cowboys last year from Nebraska. He was supposed to be a top five pick, but he failed the drug test for marijuana pre-draft, fell all the way to the second round. Jerry Jones thought, hey, I'm going to steal this point talent-wise. I have the infrastructure and team chemistry to bring on this character-issued player and give him the support to pull through it and get rid of his marijuana use and get a steal in the draft, because it worked with Dez Bryant. And he thought, hey, let's do the same thing. However, it's falling apart for him with him. Randy Gregory already failed a drug test, and now it came out he failed another one. So going into this season, he was already facing a four-game ban for marijuana, and he just failed another drug test. So now he's going to be at a minimum of 10 games this season, which is costing him half his salary, by the way, because he's still on the rookie second-round pick contract. And this is huge for the Cowboys. They already have DeMarcus Lawrence, their other defensive end, out the first four games because of substance abuse penalties. And he was another character guy they got out of Boise State in the second round. And Bob, like, what do you see happening? And these are two key pieces to an already thin defensive line group for the Dallas Cowboys.
Extremely thin defensive line group. In my opinion, when you're talking about a defense in the NFL, you want to have a strong pass rush just because it makes so much difference to everyone else on the roster. If you have a strong defensive line, it's going to improve the
everything.
It just makes your secondary's job easier. It makes the linebacker's job easier. I mean, you can make a subpar secondary unit look pretty good if you have a strong defensive line. That was the history with the Lions for a few years. So,
well, it makes sense if you think about it. I mean, it's coming from a DB. I played safety. I loved it. But if you have to cover less time because your pass rush is getting there quicker, obviously you're going to look a lot better. And if the role goes reverse, you have a miserable D-line, means you have to cover for longer in the secondary, and I don't care how long you're going to cover for, you're going to look bad at some point.
Yep.
If you look at...
eventually they're going to get open. You're gonna
history
get
tells us this. Look at the Giants when they came and beat the Patriots when they were undefeated season. What was the Giants' MO? What were they so good at? Their D-line. Right? They had Michael Strahan, they had Osi Minura, Justin Tuck, all these studs, and they gave Tom Brady no time to throw the ball. So this is, you build a team through the D-line, so the Cowboys have a really promising season pending health going into this year. Their offense could be phenomenal. However, I think this is a real concern for their defense now.
Are you kidding me, man? Not having a defensive line. Like, let's look at the impact of not having a strong defensive line on the effect of the game. So if the opposing team's offense moves the ball easier, that's less time of possession for your offense, right? That's worse field position for your offense. I mean, you could stack up and say, look, we drafted this running back. He's going to be a stud for us, carry the ball 25 times a game. We've got Tony Romo, who's the top quarterback in the league. Dez Bryant's coming back from his injury. Suppose that all this skill on offense, but if you can't back, you need to be strong in between the trenches in football. This is a big concern for the Dallas Cowboys.
I think it's a huge concern. One thing I can give them the positive is that why I think they will still be a contender and they could win shootouts, potentially all this. Because when you talk about, you just said it the best, the trenches. The NFL and any football in general is won in the trenches. O-line, D-line. What do the Dallas Cowboys have? A fantastic offensive line. Arguably the best offensive line in football.
I agree, yeah.
A fantastic offensive line. So that might be able to carry them through. However, they do have to stop people. And so if they're going to have to win in shootouts or how this is going to work, it is a concern. And they're going to have players step up coming out of nowhere that names we don't really know of, because their offseason was pretty inactive for drafting or signing free agents in the D-line. They only drafted Stryker out of Oklahoma. It's the only D-line they drafted.
Well, yeah, so they drafted high and they drafted a running back high. Kind of a controversial decision, but the plan for them is to move the ball on offense, take up possession, and get things going. Cowboys are a team worth spending some time talking about because they're one of the most popular teams in the country. So I'm guaranteed we're going to be hearing a lot about them throughout the preseason and during the season. People love the Cowboys. Their health is a big issue. Their two biggest stars on offense, both were out last year with injuries for the majority of the
season.
Tony
Romo's broke his collarbone 3 or 4 times.
How old is Romo? Like 36?
He's not that old. He's like in between 32 and 36.
Okay, so maybe 36, but maybe 32. I'm pretty sure he's not 32.
He's somewhere in there. We'll look it up.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I'm going to find this info right now.
But anyway, yeah, I think it's a major concern for the Cowboys, and we'll see what happens with them. We'll see, can they pull through? And there is also a veteran free agent that's a huge name that made a big, pretty big impact for the Cardinals last year that is
Tony
still
Romo,
a free agent.
36.
Ah,
there we go.
All
right,
Bob.
April 21st, 1980. There we go.
Damn it. Okay, anyway, Dwight Freeney is available in free agent right now still. He's older as hell. I mean, he's old. I mean, he's been around the league a long time, but he is a proven commodity that could at least give them some stability at that unit. So let's see if maybe they'll find him in free agent, see what happens.
A lot of people are going to be wondering what's going on with Greg Hardy. We're going to talk about defensive line for the Dallas Cowboys. He's a guy that might come to mind as a Pro Bowl talent, one of the most talented defensive ends that has been in the league in recent years. And last year played for the Dallas Cowboys. This year probably will be unemployed because of character issues.
Yeah, there's no way in hell the Cowboys re-signed Greg Hardy. He was a locker room nightmare last year for that team. And they've already came out saying they have no interest in him. So if they actually sign him now, I would look less upon them. But really, that my opinion on that doesn't matter at all. Anyway, let's transition now to another very interesting case that has a big impact on this league. Well, at least a huge impact on fantasy implications is Le'Veon Bell, the starting running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who in my opinion is the best running back in the NFL, better than Peterson all around because of his pass-catching ability. And he's out for the first 4 games because he missed a drug test. He didn't fail a drug test. He just missed it. And so how the NFL works, if you miss a drug test, it counts as a fail, which he knows this. In college, it's the same way when I played. You miss a drug test, it counts as a fail. So I don't know what he was doing possibly that could have made him miss this, but that's a big deal.
It sounds like he was probably knew he would fail the drug test. Like, that's the only reason these guys don't show up, I assume. Unless, I mean, some extraneous circumstance that actually doesn't allow him to show up. But I think most of the time you show up because you realize it's going to count as a failed drug test, right?
Well, I think you're right. That's the speculation going in right now. No proven factual stuff has come out about that yet. But speculation is that, yeah, he knew he was going to fail. So he missed the drug test. Then he'll appeal it and hopefully reduce it to a 2-game suspension instead of 4. Therefore, it works out better for him. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I like Le'Veon Bell, and I think he's a great player, and I won championships with him on my fantasy football roster. So I hope he comes back. But yeah, in the meantime,
and that's another one of these big time teams, a team that has been stated as a team that might be competing for a Super Bowl this year, big time contender, and they're also dealing with another young star on their team, Martavis Bryant.
Is out for the entire season.
Out for the entire season with marijuana issues.
Yeah, so D'Angelo Williams is still there. He'll back up Le'Veon Bell. And if you remember last year, he was great in his backup presence. So we'll see what happens. And let's move on to some good news happening, though, in the NFL. In terms of at least one player in the Cleveland Browns, they're troubled substance abuser, maybe the poster child of substance abuse in a lot of ways. Josh Gordon has been reinstated by the NFL and will serve a 4-game suspension this year and then be fully able to play. But however, he'll be able to go to training camp and participate in team facilities and all these things, but he just can't play the first 4 games. So this is big news for the Browns because he was the best receiver in the NFL 2 years ago.
Well, so since then, it's been 2 years. He sat out exactly 2 years of suspension, correct?
No, he sat out all of last year. He was there the year before that.
Okay, so if you're the Cleveland Browns and you realize that you have a player of Josh Gordon's capabilities, do you start to design an offense around his capabilities, or like do you start to invest in this guy and try to make him a focal point of your team, or do you trust in him in that sense, or do you kind of hold back on that idea and have him be sort of an afterthought or a secondary piece in your offense, and the idea that you're very likely to lose him because he keeps failing drug tests?
To your point, I think you definitely don't design your offense around him because of the unknown. However, you still make him a focal point, if that makes sense. He's still going to be, when he comes back, he's going to be
the most talented player on their team.
Yes, when he comes back, if he comes back to the old form where he used to, he is going to be the best player on that team, on their offense. With Joe Staley, or with their left tackle, Joe Thomas, give him a little bit of regard. He's a stud. But
Gary Barnage
is good, but I would take Josh Gordon any day.
Yeah, everyone would.
But you can't design your whole offense around him because of the unknown. However, he's still going to be your number one receiver when you get back, so he will be a focal point. Your number one receiver is still always a focal point, and they will find ways to get him the ball when he's back, but they will still run his offense coordinator scheme and how he wants it.
Okay, understood.
Yeah, so then I'll skip the Alden Smith stuff because it's all speculation. And have you heard of this? Should I talk about this?
Yeah, go ahead. You already mentioned it.
So Alden Smith, I'm a 49ers fan, so Alden Smith pisses me the hell off. But anyway, Alden Smith has been tons of substance abuse and just so many off-field issues. He's been in all the trouble. He's missing the first 8 games of this season due to all the off-field stuff. I don't want to get into it. Guy freaking drives me crazy. He's playing for the Oakland Raiders now, and there's a video that surfaced of somebody smoking weed and boasting about it and saying, oh, they're not gonna know who it is, they have no idea who it is. And he's talking to his girlfriend, I'm presuming, but however, it never shows his face during the video. And it's speculation that this is Alden Smith because he says a reference to Alden Smith in it. However, I mean, this could be fake, you have no idea whether this is real or not, but God, like, either he's an absolute idiot, right? He's just an idiot. Or somebody is really trying to mess him up. Kind of like a Laramie Tunsil type situation. Have you seen this video, Bobby?
I haven't seen it, no.
It's kind of ridiculous. This guy's just talking about, oh, I love this weed, I got my joints. He's talking, you know, he's talking all this. Boasting about his weed. And then the girlfriend's like, you're an idiot, what are you doing? And he goes, yeah, they don't see my face, they don't know who I am. And all these things. And he says Alden Smith in there, but it's kind of speculative. You'd have no idea whether it's him.
Okay.
But either way, let's move on from that. And one quick nugget is your team, the Lions, just signed Anquan Boldin to a one-year contract extension. What does this give the Lions?
Well, obviously, the Lions are reeling from the loss of Calvin Johnson, and they've been looking for veteran wide receiver depth. And honestly, I mean, obviously, you're not going to come up with a superstar like Calvin Johnson. He was one-generation player, like best wide receiver of the last 10 years. So not easy to recover from that, but coming in with Anquan Boldin battling for the third wide receiver spot, just bringing some veteran savvy. I like the move. It's a good move. Honestly, since we've had we brought in a new GM recently, we've been making good moves consistently for the last year. I see the Lions as a team on the up. No matter how stupid I sound saying that, because that's what the if people in Detroit heard me say that, they'd say you've been drinking the Kool-Aid, because we've been hearing the same story of the Lions being on the up for my entire life, pretty much. But I like the moves they made in the draft. I like the moves they made in free agency. I like Coach Caldwell and the decision to keep him on, because I think he runs a high-character system and keeps his players accountable. Last year was unfortunate. I think the season didn't go... It was tough. They had a really tough schedule to start the year. They started off with a really bad schedule and then went on a winning streak at the end of the year to kind of...
All right, Bob. I get it. You're upset about your Lions. It's okay. You just got back from Michigan. You heard all your stuff about the Lions. I agree. I think it was a good signing. I like your veteran savvy quote. I think that's a good quote for him. He's a veteran that knows how to run routes, play hard. He'll bring a good locker room presence for that
team.
You're
saying I can't take up the whole podcast with Lions talk?
No. Nobody wants to hear that. All right. So we're going to move on now to what I think... This might be the most interesting story in the NFL right now, because it has a huge implications on this season. And it's, I think it's really interesting with all this big money happening in sports right now. And what I'm talking about is Ryan Fitzpatrick with the Jets. So if you guys don't know, Ryan Fitzpatrick started for the Jets last year, threw over 30 touchdown passes for that team, played great. He played much better than anticipated. And the old Harvard grad, he's a Harvard grad, which is always respectable, and he is not currently signed with the Jets. The Jets are in a standoff with him on money. Fitzpatrick feels like he should be making at least close to $15 million a year, which makes sense for the way he played last year, but the Jets are offering him a three-year, $24 million deal. And when you look at it, Sam Bradford, put it this perspective. Sam Bradford last year for the Eagles did not play great, right? And he got a contract extension where he's making $18 million a year. And even more insanity...
It's better.
And more insanity is that Chase Daniels, their new backup they signed from Kansas City, is making $7 million a year. And now the Jets are offering Fitzpatrick $8 million a year. It just doesn't make sense. And I feel like... Fitzpatrick is doing what he's supposed to be doing. You can't fault somebody for wanting to get money for something he's deserved. They might make ridiculous money and us think that it's absolutely stupid and obscene, which it is, but we are the ones that give him the money. We give the fans give the organization money. I feel like you can't complain that much. But Fitzpatrick feels like he should get what he deserves, and he's holding out. But the Jets, I think it's so interesting. The Jets have not budged. Like, we're hitting training camp, and Fitzpatrick's still not on this team. And I feel like Fitzpatrick over Geno Smith is a two-win difference through the season. That's making the playoffs versus not making the playoffs.
Yeah, they were a quarter away from making the playoffs. Like, one quarter, and they make the playoffs last year. Fitzpatrick, the fact of the matter is, it's a quarterback market. Quarterbacks get paid a lot more than other position players around the NFL. And when you're talking about Fitzpatrick, you're talking about a guy that's an above-average starting quarterback in the NFL,
and he knows that scheme very well.
It's just a fact, and you're not gonna find somebody better than him to replace him that's not already taken by another team. I'm surprised other teams that don't have a quarterback haven't made a bigger push to get him. I don't know what the hell is going on with the Jets. Yeah, I mean, if the playoffs aren't the goal, if they're trying to win and get to the playoffs, and obviously, anytime you get to the playoffs, you have a chance to get to the Super Bowl and win. Like, that should be the goal for every team. Their best chances with Fitzpatrick, I don't know why they're not at least giving him market money for what he's worth.
Yeah, and it's it's interesting when their two leading receivers, Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall, are both have come out publicly and made training camp stances on they want Fitzpatrick back really bad. And those are your two star receivers. And the Jets still aren't budging. But I think me and Bobby both agree that I think this deal will get done at some point. I don't see Fitzpatrick sitting out all season. And I do think the Jets will budge a little bit.
Well, he doesn't have to even sit out all season. He has to sit out until one quarterback has a season-ending injury.
But he wants to play with the Jets.
He wants to get paid, obviously. I mean, I would not... If I was Fitzpatrick, them talking about him making $8 million a year when Kirk Cousins is making $20 million, when Sam Bradford with the franchise is making $20 million, tag, yeah. When... what's the name of the guy in Houston?
Oh, Osweiler?
Osweiler just signed an four-year, $72 million
contract, yeah.
And I just can't see him playing. Obviously, the money's going to be out there for him. Somebody's gonna get hurt. He's going to have a chance to play this season. He's by far the best quarterback on the market. I just don't understand why the Jets don't see it that way.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how this all resolves, but I think it's fascinating, and I think it's really a two-win difference between Geno Smith and Fitzpatrick at the helm because they have a good defense and a good running. They just got Forte and everything. So, all right, here, Bob. I am going to transition now to Major League Baseball.
All right, let's get into it.
As the trade deadline approaches, the Cubs, the favorite right now to win the World Series, made a huge trade. This is a trade that puts you in place to win the World Series. They just traded for Aroldis Chapman. He's the relief pitcher for the Yankees, and he's arguably the best relief pitcher in the game, and he's definitely the hardest throwing relief pitcher in the game. He throws consistently over 100 miles an hour, and his clock's up to 105 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Freaking stud.
Yeah. Great closer.
But the Cubs gave up a lot to get him. They give up their number one overall prospect and three other players. So, Bob, what do you think? Do you think it's a good move?
Well, I think when you're the Cubs, you're looking at this and you understand that you don't have an enormous window of time to win the World Series. And so you're looking at this and you realize, like, I'm not playing to take second place. I'm playing to win it all. And what did they just do? They just picked up the best closer in baseball. So, yeah, I think it's a good series. I mean, obviously, relief pitching is a huge deal, especially in the playoffs when so much of it comes down to pitching. And, I mean, it might not be good for the future, but for that franchise and what they need and what winning the pennant would mean to them, they absolutely need to make this move.
I agree. I think kudos to Theo Epstein to make that move, get the bold courage to give away what he gave up to get him. Because you're right. If they win the World Series, it doesn't freaking matter who they gave away. They haven't had a World Series since 1908. You're talking well over 100 years, longest drought. This means the Cubs are Chicago. The Cubs mean so much to Chicago, it's insane. And they're swinging, they're going for it. They got a great, great team. And now they might have the best rotation for late inning rotation in at least the National League. The Royals are great too, but at least in the National League. And I think this is a swing for the fences. Go for the World Series and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, dude, you got to play to win it all. And imagine what taking second place would mean for them as a franchise. Way more devastating. It means nothing. Than losing some prospects.
Taking second place means absolutely nothing. It just means another way they lost, another heartbreaking loss.
It means
loss.
A lost opportunity. It means another maybe their best opportunity in a long time to win the World Series squandered. And who knows when they'll get another chance that great. If they're not all in on this year, I don't know what their strategy is, but yeah, for their franchise, they need to win one, and this is the year. You got to go all in on it.
I agree, and how great Chapman is, he's great, but what it's going to come down for the Cubs is Arrieta and Lester going to pitch great, because pitching is what wins World Series. All right, so let's move on to another trade that happened today. The Toronto Blue Jays traded for Melvin Upton Jr., and Melvin Upton Jr. is an older player. He's 32, but he's kind of having a resurgence year for the Padres, and
I wish Thomas was here for this.
Yeah, Thomas doesn't like him because of the trade from the Braves, and he played off the Braves and a lot of things.
Oh, yeah, they just gave him this huge contract as he was a promising player for the Marlins. and they gave him this huge contract, and he just sucked the whole time. And I had to listen to so much of Thomas's bitching and complaining about at the time BJ Upton, now Melvin Upton, and then now he's off the Braves, and he's looking pretty damn good. His hitting has had a resurgence. He's getting on base again and putting in RBIs. It's big time.
Yeah, so really what this trade does is it gives the Blue Jays some depth in the outfield. It gives them to move around, gives some creativity on who they want to start, who's the DH. And Melvin Upton has a chance to be a 30-30 guy this year. 30 home runs, 30 stolen bases. There's not many players in the MLB that can do that. And so, yeah, I think it was a good trade. They give a pitching prospect for him. I don't know the guy's name. You never know any of these pitching prospects unless you're like diehard, insane, unless they're Steven Strasburg or Urias or whatever from the Dodgers.
The prospect field in baseball is so deep and confusing to me. Like, I'm not sure. I mean, I understand, like, these guys work their way up through the minor leagues and become good major league players, but I don't know how many of them do that. What, like, how many rounds of the major league draft are there? Like, 20?
There's a crap load. And you're going from high school and college and all over the place. So there's a lot of players.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I obviously, you want to prepare for the future, but when you have a chance to win, I think, especially when you're talking about guys that haven't even made it to the major leagues yet, you got to kind of weigh that and say, we don't know if these guys are ever going to pay off, but this guy's playing great this year, and he's got a chance. He's going to give us a chance to win, and you've got
– Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays were bold last year trading for David Price, so they're bold. They want to win. They want to bring something to Toronto, which, hey, they have a chance. They have a pretty good pitching staff. Bullpen's okay. And they got really good hitting. So, all right. So let's transition now. And I have to say, maybe I jinxed this team a little bit. Last week in the podcast, I really boasted about them a lot and saying that, hey, this team is really good. Are they the new best team in baseball? They surpassed the Cubs. And this was prior to the All-Star break. But after All-Star break, we're talking about the San Francisco Giants. They lost 7 of 8 games and really kind of hit a slump a little bit. And, we'll see. I think they're still going to pull through. They have too good of a pitching staff not to. But, Bob, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, obviously losing 7 out of 8 games, you're in a funk, right? They've got an extremely talented team, perennial contenders, and be excited. They should have a good chance of working their way into the playoffs and making this thing win. Obviously, they're like still at the top of the NL West and towards the top of the National League. The Cubs recently surpassed them, but it's just ugly. How do you work your way out of something like that when you're just losing and losing and losing? It kind of winning feeds winning and losing feeds losing. So something's gonna have to come around. Like, you got to dig from somewhere deep inside and start playing together as a team and having confidence in each other and start winning baseball games. But it's just hard. Like, losing does not help.
Well, one thing you say, this is baseball, guys. There, you can't overreact on a lot of things. I kind of set up that question, but this is baseball. You have 162 games in a season. Every team goes through a losing streak at some point. Every single team. This freaking baseball. There's so many damn games. So I think they're going to pull up right out of this, and they'll – end up being at the top of the NL West at the end of the season and be just fine. That's my prediction.
And the Dodgers are coming for him, only 2.5 games behind now.
It's freaking crazy. It's Clayton Kershaw still on the DL. So many injuries, but hey, Seager, their freaking rookie is a beast. But all right, last thing with baseball, we're going to talk about the trade deadline. And Chris Sale, arguably the front runner for the AL Cy Young right now, might be available. And whatever team could possibly trade for him would have to give up a gauntlet of prospects, like insane amount of prospects. But
so who are some teams that might make a move for a top pitcher like that?
I mean, Boston immediately comes to mind because they need pitching and they have a lot of prospects. You have the Dodgers. You have a lot of teams like that. I mean, a lot of big names. It's hard to say because it would literally have to be so much to get him. And honestly, I don't think he's going to be traded, but he's on the mention. So if a team gets Chris Sale, that could transcend somebody to a World Series for sure.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Coming into the last quarter of the season, is there any other big stars on the trade block?
Not like him. There's a catcher that plays for the Pod or the Milwaukee Brewers that's really high up there, but he's not a transcendent player like Chris Sale is. One last thing on Chris Sale. This is kind of a funky story. So, Bobby, on Sunday, or Saturday, I mean, the White Sox were playing the Tigers, and they were wearing the throwback uniforms. Chris Sale hated these throwback uniforms. Like, literally hated them. So what did he do? He took a knife to them and completely cut them and dismantled them. And for this,
he cut his own jersey or he cut
his own jersey. His own jersey. And so what happened is he obviously didn't start that night. And the White Sox suspended him for 5 games, but he'll start on Thursday. But I think this is a very interesting thing for him to cut up a jersey because he doesn't like it, to miss a start and cost his team. But also it's kind of funny, I think, in some instances.
So, funny in a very childish manner.
Correct.
It's something...
you're getting paid millions of dollars to do what you do.
We're talking about an adult man who's concerned, is getting paid millions of dollars to play a sport, and he got so worked up over this, over what his jersey looks like.
His uniform,
there has to be some more to this story, right? He's just...
No!
He's
this is what came out.
He just hates his jersey.
He hated these throwback uniforms.
And he gets a suspension. I assume when you get suspended, you lose money.
Yeah, I'm sure he lost nothing serious for his sake, but he's missed one start for his team. So, I mean, that's cost crazy. His team. I mean, he's a star. Crazy. He's the star of the team, and he missed a start. Anyway, I thought that was funny.
Insane reason to miss a start. But yeah.
All right, we're going to take one more break real quick, and we're going to come back here with a little bit of Olympic, NBA Olympic talk, and our rapid riots.
What's up, guys? Want to take a second to promote Knob Hill Bar and Grill. My current place of employment in Albuquerque's Knob Hill area by the university. We're on Bryn Mawr and Central. One of the best dining experiences in town as far as like a very upscale, high quality dining experience with delicious food and, of course, tremendous cocktails made by yours truly quite frequently. We also, Friday and Saturday night, probably the most exciting and cool kind of a really, really fun nightclub experience that Albuquerque has to offer. Just a good place to be, safe, fun, great time. Hope to see you all there. Thank you.
All right, welcome back here. So we are going to go into now a little bit about the Olympics. Olympics are coming up, right? Let's talk a little about the men's basketball team, right? And it's a little different look this year. You don't have LeBron James. You don't have Dwayne Wade. You don't have Steph Curry, who hasn't really played much in it, but he's still the star. You don't have Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Chris Paul. A lot of big players out, and they've played twice so far in just little friendly matches. Sounds like a soccer term there. But they actually beat the hell out of Argentina and China. So what are your – do you have anything but – gold aspirations for the United States, but not just gold, dominance in gold?
Well, so USA basketball is such an interesting situation because you just listed, like, maybe, I don't know, six of the 10 biggest stars in the NBA that come from the United States, and honestly, we're not even going to feel that too hard. Those guys are obviously incredible players, but we just have such depth of an ability to replace those guys with extremely talented and extremely capable players. I would be surprised if we're not competing for the gold. I think we got a great coaching staff. More important than anything when you're talking about putting these many superstar players together is finding cohesion and a cohesive unit. So sometimes it works out in a certain way where all the players play well together. And the only times when the USA has ever had problems is when you put the big superstars on the court and they're not sharing the ball or playing team offense or team defense very well. So as long as they're doing that, I still think we'll have the most talented team on the court and should be competing for the gold.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that really separates the United States basketball is our big men. DeAndre Jordan and DeMarcus Cousins are absolutely dominating these games. Like, it's kind of a joke you watch. They're getting every rebound they want, dunking on everybody. And if you haven't watched DeMarcus Cousins yet in these Olympics, this is the player that he should be all the time. If you could just get him on an organization that has clear stability with talent around him, he could be arguably the best player in the NBA. Watch him these Olympics. He is so dominant, and he slimmed down his frame this offseason. Just watch him. But I agree.
I'm excited to see DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, watching DeAndre Jordan – is just freaking stupid. What that guy's able to do with his athleticism and his length, his height and strength, it's like, it doesn't even make sense that a human being can do this type of stuff. Looks like he's jumping 14 feet in the air every time he's up there grabbing a rebound. Obviously, I agree with you, DeMarcus Cousins. The Kings are a despicable franchise. They're wasting one of the most talented players in the league.
When he gets his mind right, he is insane. But yeah, I agree. I think gold is by far the expectation, and I don't think just gold. I think dominance in gold. And they haven't lost in like 50 straight international matches.
They only have, like, only Melo and maybe one other guy are the only players on the team that have any Olympic experience.
No, there's like five players that have some Olympic experience. I mean, Paul George got hurt horrifically, so that doesn't count. But let's see, who else would be on there? I mean, Klay Thompson wasn't, Draymond Green wasn't, Jimmy Butler wasn't, I'm trying to think of who it would be.
Yeah, I can't think of it either, man.
Hey, anyway, well, look at Kyrie Irving. Has Kyrie Irving had Olympic experience?
I don't believe so. I don't. Durant. Durant is the other one.
Durant has,
so,
yeah.
So outside of Durant and Carmelo Anthony, this is all of these guys' first Olympics. But I mean, we're still looking at a star-studded team. Ton of great players. I really have no qualms with any of these guys being out there. Great athletes, great, definitely going to contribute in a positive way.
They're going to be absolute beasts, but...
Yeah. All right. Here it comes, baby!
All right, rapid riots.
Here we go.
All right, Bob, you start it off.
All right. My rapid riot has to do with a certain ex-MVP from the NBA... Derrick Rose came out to the media and he said something along the lines of that the general consensus is that there are two super teams in the NBA expected to meet in the NBA Finals. And those teams are, of course, the Golden State Warriors, who just added Kevin Durant to their 73-winning team formula, and the New York Knicks. Derrick Rose thinks that the New York Knicks are a consensus super team with the addition of him and Joakim Noah to the team that missed the playoffs last year. Some of their other players, Carmelo Anthony, young promising Kristaps Porzingis, and Courtney Lee. Now, with respect to Derrick Rose, if this was 2010, that would be one hell of a damn team. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis would be 14, but... they would have Derrick Rose in MVP form, who was a hell of a player. Joakim Noah was a hell of a player in 2010. And Courtney Lee was a hell of a player in 2010, helping the Orlando Magic reach the NBA Finals. But this isn't 2010. Courtney Lee's been a nomad. Derrick Rose has been a nothing, below average NBA point guard for the last 3 years, dealing with knee injuries, of course. And Joakim Noah was benched last year for the Chicago Bulls in favor of more productive players. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. Obviously, that is a lot of talent to have on one team, but it looks to me more like one of these teams that doesn't pan off with all, like, the talent doesn't pay off necessarily in comparison to some of these other super teams. I still think the Cavs
and
the
Warriors
are on top there.
Yeah, I think Derrick Rose might be a little crazy there.
But, here we go.
All right, my rapid riot goes on to this really sad news. I keep saying all these damn sad stories, but the Russia Olympic team. So if you've not heard, they are in some serious, serious controversy with anti-doping policies, and they are about to have all of their athletics portion of their Olympic team banned because of anti-doping, and five other teams being affected, including aquatics, so swimming and stuff, canoeing, kayaking, modern pentathlon, rowing, and sailing. And so it's not 100% sure how many of those are, but the athletics portion of it are all banned. So the sprinters, all those guys, the jumpers.
When you say athletics, are you talking about track and field?
Track and field, exactly.
Okay.
So that's what I'm talking about. And they're all banned because of anti-doping. So this is a huge scandal. They've gone through three different committees trying to figure out whether they'll be banned or not. And so right now you have up to 15 more athletes suspended for canoeing. So they're having so much. They were at one point going to have their entire Olympic teams, all their teams, going to be suspended because of this. But however, through fighting through this and talking to other people and going through all these different committees, some of the other teams are not going to be infected, including archery, judo, shooting, tennis, and equestrian, which is riding horses. So those will not be. But it is a huge issue, this anti-doping. We keep talking about the NFL, and now we're bringing it back to Russia, where this is affecting our Olympic Games to a humongous standard, where a country that always competes for the most medals is not going to compete. They're going to be banned because of this doping. So I salute it. Get doping out of the sports. However, it's never going to get completely gone. People will always find a way to surpass this.
I mean, let's not take ourselves out of the blame here. Obviously, big time U.S. medalists in the Olympics have been caught doping in the past. Marion Jones is one that comes to mind. I know
the big other USA other runner, the sprinter, the big famous sprinter from USA.
So eventually all of this is monetized and taken with country pride. I've heard conspiracies that Russia, not even conspiracies, just kind of news updates that Russia has been encouraging their athletes to take steroids in order to have a higher success rate at the Olympics. It's unfortunate, but the real tragedy is that it's against the spirit of the Olympics, which is amateur athletes competing at the top of their sports from around the world, and hopefully being crowned, just having a chance to represent their country in an honest and respectful manner. So it's a shame, but we got to do it. We got to start cracking down on Russia, U.S., whoever it is.
The whole world.
We need these games to be fair and clear of drugs.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us here on the Rametown Riot. That was another episode. And, we'll see you here next week.
Yeah, ton of fun. Check us out on Twitter. Give us a shout-out. We'll be putting out more social media soon. We got a couple weeks in before the NFL season starts, so we got opportunities to talk about broader sports in general. I'm looking forward to it. Come back and visit us next week. See ya.
Survive in these heights.